Okay, so moving on to agenda paper
where
three.
Where you are located.
IES 12 and handing over to Gustavo.
Thank you. Thank you. So we will now move on to agenda paper three. The committee received a submission about how an entity in its consolidated financial statements accounts for deferred tax related to its investment in a subsidiary in a jurisdiction in which income tax is payable only on distribution of profits. In the fact pattern submitted, the conditions for applying the exception from recognizing a deferred tax liability in paragraphs 39 of IS 12 are not satisfied. Paragraphs 18 to 20 summarize the outreach performed, and paragraphs 24 to 34 include our analysis of the matter. Based on our analysis, we concluded that, in the fact pattern described, IS 12 requires an entity to recognize and measure a deferred tax liability reflecting the tax consequences of recovering its investment in the subsidiary. In doing so, the entity measures the deferred tax liability using the tax rate applicable to distributed profits, that is, the tax rate of 20%. I'll now pause and direct your attention to question 1 on page 9 and ask whether you agree with our analysis of the requirements in IS 12. Thank you.
Hey, who wants to talk about IS 12?
I completely agree with the paper. I think it's a very good analysis. I thought it was particularly convincing, the part that explained why paragraph 52A and 57A do not apply. Especially explaining that, you know, distributions from subsidiary to the parent are not distributions of dividends in the consolidated financial statements, and therefore these paragraphs do not apply. That sounded very convincing to me, so I agree with the analysis.
Okay, thanks, Kirsten. Guy?
I reiterate the first thing you said. I thought the analysis was quite straightforward, but, and maybe I'm jumping the gun a bit here, but the comments about the applicability of 52A and 57A to the fact my one suggestion I have is to address that point in the agenda decision, to make that come out in chat, but otherwise I thought the analysis and the
straightforward. Okay, thanks, Guy. Young Soo?
Yes, I also like to say I support the step analysis and conclusion. Actually, I really like the paragraphs 37 and 38 of the step paper, especially paragraph 38. It clearly says that there are two different types of taxes. One is a tax arises from investment, and the other one is a tax arises from dividend. And this agenda paper is about the first one. Tax arises from investment, so that paragraph 38 to 45 12 should be applied. It was very clear to me, so that I fully support the analysis and conclusion of the stuff.
Thank you. Bonnie?
Thank you. I generally agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. I think there could be a view to look at 57A differently. Because if you think about a set of consolidated financial statements, particularly when you're looking at tax, you look at a legal entity which is below the consolidated, and then that builds up to what your consolidated financials are. So while I agree that the dividends between entities, and they are dividends, do get eliminated in consolidation, the tax impact and the tax consequence does not. So I could see a view that 57A does. When you look at the entity, you're applying IFRS to the entity on a standalone basis and then building up to the consolidated. So I think there is an alternative view there. The other point that I think should be clarified is that in some countries, there's a difference sometimes between the total amount of reserves and what's available to be paid out in a dividend. And so I think in this example, it is clear that there are dividends available to be distributed, but I think you could get to a different answer if there are reserves that are not available to be paid out in dividends. And I think we should clarify that point within the example that we're talking about, where dividends are available to be paid and there is an intent to pay, because I think those two things are critical in coming to the conclusion. I think that's implied, but I think we need to specify that point.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Bonnie. Bertrand?
I agree with the staff analysis and the staff conclusion. Maybe a couple of comments. First one, I think all lies on the fact that in this case, the recognition exception does not apply. I would have strengthened that a bit more in the draft tentative agenda decision, notably when on page 13 of the draft tentative agenda decision, you refer to paragraph 39 of IS-12. I think there we could strengthen a bit. First of all, quote explicitly 39, so as to make it very clear that which exception we are talking about, and maybe elaborate a bit more on the fact that the exception does not apply in this instance. So that's the first comment. And second one, it will be similar to Boney. I was a bit confused by a sentence in paragraph 29 of the agenda paper when you say, accordingly, in our view, any tax consequence arising from such a distribution is not a tax consequence of dividends. I mean, it's not because you eliminate the principal transaction in the consolidated accounts that the tax consequences wouldn't remain in the consolidated accounts. Think of withholding tax. What about if there is a minority interest? There will be an impact in consolidation. And for instance, in other standards, you have similar issues such as IS-21 for exchange differences. So, I mean, but at the same time, it's not that a problem because this is not reflected in the draft tentative agenda decision, and I'm not sure it's key to the conclusion that is effectively mentioned in the draft tentative agenda decision. So, I would more strengthen the fact that in this particular case, you're not in the recognition exception in paragraph 39.
Thank you, Bruce.
Yeah, I'm a bit torn about this agenda decision. I'll tell you guys why. I don't not like the answer, but my challenge is when I read these two paragraphs, when I look at 57A and 52A, I really struggle in my mind to get out of them. And I think this comes to that alternative view that they're looking at. I mean, I think that to turn around and say, well, the reason we don't think these apply is because, well, the dividend doesn't exist, I'm not convinced by that and for the similar arguments. I think there is a dividend. And I think that maybe it's also that we come from jurisdictions where the standalone accounts are as important as the consolidated accounts. So for us, that's a big issue. And if you look at some South Africa, most companies will report their consolidated and the parents' accounts, for example, standalone. So we have an importance on that. I'm not convinced that because of that elimination as a consolidation journal entry, it just says to me, well, in that case, therefore, this isn't a dividend, and therefore, you're kicked out. You can have a lease between companies, and, you know, yes, we eliminate them up, but that doesn't negate the fact that there was a financial transaction between them. So the problem with that is that when I apply that thinking, that I'm not convinced that you're outside the dividend, then to me, these two paragraphs speak exactly to the point in terms of how I should do it. So I'm saying that if I don't dislike the answer in where 39 gets us to, but if we're going to say, well, these two don't apply, I'm just not convinced the argument is, well, because there's not a dividend. To me, that's just a leap that gets me too far. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm kind of torn on this because I think that we've got these two paragraphs both, well, we've got these two sections of IS-12 both telling us what to do in this situation, and I'm not convinced that it's entirely clear which one applies, which is why the recommendation of is I actually think we may need to look at something else to say we need a lot more clarity around which one of these to use, because I just don't think you get out of it.
Does it help to express it slightly more neutrally, so as opposed to saying it doesn't exist because it's intergroup, to look more at the fact that 57A is talking about a dividend from the perspective of the reporting entity, which is the consolidated?
So I think, Bruce, just to let you know, it's kind of what we're saying always is when you go through our literature, you're always thinking about it from the reporting entity's perspective. So in this case, if I were the subsidiary reporting my standalone financial statements, of course I'm looking at it from my perspective. Mm. And this is a dividend from my perspective. So maybe how we articulate about eliminating is not quite right, but we're just saying whenever you read the requirements, you're always thinking about it from the reporting entity's perspective. And in this case, because these are the consolidated financial statements, we're thinking about it from, the reporting entity is the group.
But the reporting entity still received a dividend. Yes, I accept we're removing that from consolidation, but the initial entry was that we received a dividend. And I'm saying we're talking here now, we're trying to use an argument here that says, well, the dividend really never existed.
Yeah, but I suppose we even link in, because the words in 57 that talk about it, recognising the consequences of dividend, when it recognises a liability to pay a dividend. So that just even emphasised more to us that we're that when you're thinking about what does this paragraph relate to, you're thinking about the dividend from the reporting entity's perspective, even more emphasised by the fact it's talking about when do I recognise a liability for this dividend. And obviously from the group's perspective,
I can see the argument you guys are making. What I'm saying is that reading this cold, I'm saying if I was looking at IAS 12 and hadn't been through this, I would easily read these paragraphs and assume that I'm in there. And I'm not convinced many people would then go searching for 39, because I think a lot of people would read and say, hang on, guys, this is what the stand's talking exactly to that. And so I guess I'm saying, kind of in the middle in terms of where we are. If the decision then is to say, no, actually what we're going to do is we're going to go with the agenda decision as we've written it, I don't think we do enough there to tell me why I'm outside of those other two.
So I was just going to ask you, so from your perspective, would it be helpful, for example, to point out that 57A is talking about where you have a liability to pay a dividend, so it's the reporting entity's perspective to bring that in? Would that help?
What I'm saying is, if the view of the committee is that I'm in the minority and they say, listen, we actually think that there's enough there to get you there. I mean, I personally don't think there is. I would have said we need to do a bit more. But if the view of the committee is, no, we can do this by agenda decision, then my comment would be, then we need to do something more to explain why we're outside of this.
Carl?
I generally agree with staff's analysis. I confess I experienced some confusion, similar to Bruce's confusion. And I think that there is a need to enhance in the agenda decision, page 13, the second to last and third to last paragraphs. We need to enhance reference and to bring some wording of the paragraph 39 of IAS 12 to make it the agenda decision less missed. This way, to me, is quite missed. I can't understand exactly what's going on without that.
Okay. Tom.
Yeah, thank you. I always start reading the agenda decision and then I go back to the papers behind. When I read the tentative agenda decision, I was wondering why is 52A and 57A not applicable. So I fully agree that it should be made clear in the decision why these paragraphs are not to be used in this case.
Brian,
I agree with the analysis. For me, this is essentially a geography question. I think the question we're looking at is the deferred tax consequence of the temporary difference from the investment in the subsidiary. There is a specific recognition exemption that isn't met in this particular case. I'm not wild about the wording of paragraph 29, but for me that's not quite precisely what's driving the answer. I think the answer is this geography question. I note, because I'm from a jurisdiction where we have separate financial statements for subsidiaries as well, I think the subsidiary would certainly apply the undistributed rate when it was preparing its own financial statements, and this would be a difference on consolidation. If it would be helpful to point that out, then by all means kind of point it out. But I am quite comfortable with the answer at the consolidated level.
Lisa.
Yeah, I was going to say that from my perspective, I thought that To me, I agree with the staff paper, and then it made sense is that it was about the logic of that you started at the subsidiary level first, and because the subsidiary hadn't declared a dividend, then they didn't apply the guidance, I think it's in 57 and 52. So therefore, you had to look at the parent and the consolidation and say, okay, well, then you went through the criteria and say, well, do you expect to distribute the profits in the foreseeable future? And then we say, yes, and you apply the guidance there. So to me, I thought that the paper was laid out well, and I understood the basis of how you got there. I did think that in the actual tentative decision, there could be just a little bit more on the paragraph 39, just to restate again why this would apply and why you did not meet that exception, if that would be helpful.
Okay. All right. Bonnie, you want to come in?
Yeah, I want to just state clearly, I agree with Bruce. I don't think it's clear in reading the words that it is referring to the reporting entity. I think there can be an alternate view. And I think if we were to state otherwise, I think we're reading something into the standards that isn't there. So that was the issue that I had, even though I understood how the staff kind of went through the answer. I'm not uncomfortable with the answer. I just think that part's not clear.
You know, Bonnie, to your comment, and I guess also back to Bruce, one of the things I'm talking to people about agenda decisions and all the discussions we've had about status and authority and not going, you know, not coloring outside the lines, is that it can't add to or change requirements, you know, of the existing authoritative words. But I do think that the process of the outreach, the staff analysis, and the discussion at the table can bring new insights to the existing words and how they interact. And to your point about, is there, after this analysis, an alternative reading of paragraph 57A that would let you use the undistributed rate? I think to me the phrasing of recognizing a liability is for the dividend really talks about the entity, the reporting entity paying the dividend. I think, like Bruce, I would have felt like, well, on the one hand you have this, and on the one hand you have that. If I was sitting reading it alone, but after you go through the discussion in the paper and hear the analysis, I think that's the kind of illumination that we hope the interpretation committee's discussion brings to existing words. So I guess it's just back to asking the question of whether you think having focused on those words of talking about the recognition of a liability, and I'm phrasing it that way rather than the focus on the elimination and consolidation, that 57A57A is talking about the recognition of a liability for a dividend payment. And that is something that doesn't exist, in the consolidated financial statements.
But it creates a tax impact. So if I were to unwind the liability in my subsidiary accounts, would I also unwind the tax impact?
That's
the question that it creates in my mind in terms of, I understand your point. Yeah. I do, and that's the disconnect that I have, is if a subsidiary has declared a dividend, mm-hmm. there is a tax impact that otherwise wouldn't be there, then do I unwind both at the consolidated level?
But that's why I was focusing not on the elimination mm-hmm. argument as much as the point that 57A is written in the context of the entity positively recognizing a liability for a dividend. And I'm just saying that when you're looking at the consolidated financial statements, and this is, I think, part of the distinction Brian was making, this does not automatically read over to the subsidiaries' financial statements, whether they're consolidated or separate, that when you read that and say, okay, what is the significance? It's saying that this paragraph applies when you are the entity recognizing the liability. And it is a question to you. That was just, having just looked again at the words at the beginning of that paragraph, I think it's explaining why, that focus explains why 57A does not apply in this circumstance, and therefore why you revert to paragraph 39.
Okay. Okay, can I let Gustavo in with that background?
Yeah, I would just say that, just give more context about what we meant on paragraph 29. So we're not saying that there isn't a tax consequence. We're just saying that in the context of consolidated financial statements, the tax consequence is of recovering the investment in the subsidiary. It's not the tax consequence of paying a dividend, because when a subsidiary declares a dividend to the parent from the consolidated financial statements, you wouldn't recognize it as a dividend. You would just, you basically just moving cash from one entity to the other. So there is a tax consequence of doing that, but the tax consequence is of recovering the investment rather than making a distribution. That's how we think the paragraphs apply in this situation.
So now I'm going to hand over to Trina. Sorry. Who was trying to come in? Guy. I was going to hand over to Petrina, maybe then I'll let you in quickly, Guy, if that's right, and suggest that you guide us through, given what you've heard from Bonnie in terms of the fact pattern in terms of actually able to pay a dividend, Bertrand's comments in terms of being clear about the exception, and then the general discussion about the clarity of why, because I think in this case it would help people if the committee agrees to talk about why we did focus on these paragraphs and not 52A and 57A to give maximum benefit from an agenda decision, if the committee can agree with it. So I'll let you think about that, Petrina. And in the meantime, Guy, did you want to come in?
I was just going to pick up on something that was just mentioned. I agree with the thought about a liability for a dividend from the reporting entity perspective, as has been described and explained in the paper. But another important thing to remember here is that in the consolidated accounts, there's a taxable temporary difference, as defined in the standard, that we're obligated to account for. In the separate financial statements, there isn't a taxable temporary difference that we're obligated to account for. And so that's another very important distinction between how to think about the application by itself, the consolidated accounts versus the standalone separate accounts of the entities. That's not to suggest that the expert in the paper about the 57A.
Sorry, Guy, we lost your wrap-up there, but I think the thing that maybe threw people a little bit in the paper was this idea that there's an elimination, which makes people feel like we're saying it didn't happen, and I don't think that's what we mean. Yep. It's rather you're trying to emphasise that it's the reporting entity perspective, so to the point you just made, Gustavo, some of that is reflected in thinking about the subsidiary, and some of it's reflected in the dividends payable, looking at the consolidated group, which I think is a better explanation of what we mean. But with that, can I hand over to you, Petrina?
Yeah, so if we look at the agenda decision pages 13 and 14, what we heard, and therefore what I will suggest, is that in the fact pattern, first of all, in bullet A, I think, Bonnie, what might help you there is if we describe that as undistributed profits of the subsidiary, maybe in brackets, that are available to be distributed. We add a clarification that these are profits that are available to be distributed. Bertrand, I don't know if it will be helpful in the context of the recognition exception if we just added the words at the start of bullet B, the entity has determined that the conditions for applying, blah, 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 to show that it is, you know, there is some judgment there, and it's that the entity has itself determined that the conditions are not satisfied. I think, Bertrand...
Wouldn't you quote all the paragraph 39? You were about to...
I was about to get there. if you all agree, I think Bertrand would like... So in the paragraph that begins, paragraph 39 of IS 12, instead of just saying, except to the extent that the conditions specified, we could actually specify the two conditions in the agenda decision there. And then just before the last paragraph, I think what we could do is include an observation that, you know, in this fact pattern, the entity does not apply paragraphs, you know, 57A and 52A, noting that, you know, 57A applies only in the context of dividends payable by the reporting entity.
I had one additional comment. So if we add on that paragraph 39, the two criteria to be met, I just thought that in that next paragraph where we say in the fact pattern described in the request, the entity's investment in the subsidiary, that we reiterate that it's because the entity expects the subsidiary to distribute its undistributable profits in the foreseeable future, because that's the key, just to reiterate that, that's the key reason why we come to the conclusion is why that the criteria has been met.
I agree with that.
All right, so with that adjustment, can I first of all get a show of hands from the committee that you agree with the staff recommendation not to add the matter to your standard setting agenda?
Bruce, not
one, so 11? 11. Yeah. Okay. And then with the amendments to the agenda decision, tentative agenda decision that Petrina has just outlined, could I get a show of hands for who can support the, that tentative agenda decision?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
11, okay. 11.
Sorry.
11. 11.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so now moving on to something we've discussed before.